This is a WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
This morning, we'll be talking with different representatives and different professors and whatnot from MTSU. And starting off the show, the Medical School Early Acceptance Program, which is a program that offers, I guess, a unique partnership between MTSU and the Meharry Medical College in Nashville. And with us in studio, we have Eric Miller, the advising manager of the Pre-Professional Health Science Advising Center at the MTSU College of Basic and Applied Sciences. How are you this morning?
Doing well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
And you brought with you a student this morning, Nick Yellamelli. Yeah, so I guess, Eric, starting off with you, tell us a little bit more about what you do there at MTSU.
Sure. So I'm the academic advising manager for the Pre-Professional Health Science Advising Center. I work with students who are interested in pursuing a health professional career, something like medicine, dentistry, pharmacy, medical lab science, sonography, things like that. And I'm super excited about this program and trying to get the word out to students in the area who may be interested in applying. We have our deadline coming up on December 1st, and so we're really trying to get the word out and make sure that students understand what the program is all about so that they can get their application in and we can consider them for the program.
It seems like anything in the medical field is extremely popular, and there's a lot of jobs available as well.
Absolutely, yeah, there's jobs all across the board. This one in particular, this program is for students who are interested in becoming a primary care physician in a rural or underserved part of Tennessee, and we know that there's a critical need for that in our state. And so we're trying to fast track students out into the community where they can be most helpful.
So when you look at rural areas across the state, what population size are we talking here?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't have those actual exact numbers. We have a list from the state that we send out to students that identify certain counties that have been identified as rural and underserved.
And then within this program, how will this work? As far as classes here at Murfreesboro at MTSU, then classes in Nashville, Meharry, how do they go about, you know, X amount of hours here in town, then Nashville? What do they do?
Sure. So it's a traditional pre-medical program, except that it's accelerated. So it's a three-year program instead of a traditional four. And so they take all the regular classes that a pre-medical student would take, like organic chemistry and biochemistry and microbiology and genetics. And they do that within 3 years here. And then if they get the scores that they need on the MCAT exam, the medical college admissions test, and if they have the right grades, they can move on to Meharry because they've already received admission to Meharry directly out of high school, which is a really unique part of this program.
And then, Nick, where do you fall into all of this as far as being a student?
So this is my first year at MTSU. I'm a freshman.
What are your plans in the future and everything?
Part of this program, as Mr. Miller mentioned, is you have to become a primary care physician in a rural area. And I think what really drove me to this program is in high school, you know, I'd go to these hospitals and I'd see people traveling 30 minutes, an hour plus just to get some good healthcare. And I think that really shows that there is a major issue here and I'd love to be a part of the solution.
If you, let's say, get a job somewhere, I don't know, 3 hours from here, 2 hours from here, would your goal be to actually live in that community where you're working?
Yeah, I think that's part of what this program wants is that, you know, if we're part of the community, we can see what the community needs and help bring change to it. So yeah, that would definitely interest me.
And then Eric, because it's so focused on rural communities, are there already contracts in place, hospitals that you're working with? What does that look like?
Yes, Meharry has a residency program that is for rural and underserved areas. And so these students will be steered towards that residency program. So after their 4 years of education at Meharry, they'll do a traditional three-year residency program. And then beyond that, they'll go out and hopefully work in that area.
So do you help these students get jobs in the future after they graduate?
That's a good question, too. Our oldest class is in their fourth year at Meharry right now. So they've not yet graduated. They're still students at Meharry. But yes, I think that Meharry will help with that. And I don't think they'll be, we don't expect or anticipate trouble, you know, with placing students for jobs.
Now, do you know some of the areas where they will be working? I mean, some of the cities?
I do not. I think it could be anywhere, you know, deemed that rural and underserved area.
And then is funding available through the state? Is that what's helping to fund all this?
Yes, we are very fortunate to receive funding from the state. And students in this program receive a really generous scholarship. They get students can attend tuition free, which is really fantastic. And it's not just tuition free at MTSU, but it's also tuition free at Meharry. So there's an opportunity here for students to spend 3 years at MTSU without paying any tuition or fees, and then to move into Meharry and not have to spend any tuition and fees there as well. And they come out with a bachelor's degree from MTSU and a doctor of medicine degree from Meharry Medical College.
So to do this tuition free, are they, you know, signing a contract with the state saying, you know, I agree to work in a rural community once I graduate?
Exactly right. Yeah. So they, it is understood, and they do need to sign something that says once they graduate, they after they finish their residency, they need to spend a period of 3 years working in a rural or underserved area as part of payback for the scholarships that they receive for the program.
And it has to be in Tennessee, right?
It does have to be in Tennessee. Our dollars come from the state of Tennessee. We recruit only students within the state of Tennessee, and then we expect that they will work in Tennessee.
Now, for a doctor who's working in some of these more rural areas, is there any chance they won't have enough patients to cover their bills, or what does that look like as far as the patient numbers go?
Yeah, we don't expect that. I think that there'll be plenty of work for the doctors once they're out in the field, and that's part of the reason why I think primary care was selected as the main attraction, as the main specialty. That way, they can serve as many patients as possible when they're out in their working capacity.
And then, Nick, going back to you as a student right now, what do you foresee in the future as far as, you know, the world of medicine, especially in rural communities?
Yeah, you know, medicine's always changing, but that's kind of part of it, right? It's you're always learning something new, and I really like that portion of medicine. That's kind of why I chose the program.
Now, do you foresee needing funding to buy any equipment or anything along those lines? Because when you look at more rural areas, I would guess a lot of the areas don't have, there's not a lot of funding available for things like equipment.
Right, yeah. You know, at these primary care hospitals, some of them don't have the high-tech technology, but, you know, that's kind of part of the challenge, and I think that that's kind of a good way to learn.
And then Eric, the students you've been working with, do they seem excited about working in more rural areas and like, you know, a country, a small town type setting?
Absolutely. I think that's what draws them into the program. And that's really what we're looking for too, is we want students who are interested in working in these areas, who know that they want to be primary care physicians, who want to make the most amount of impact in the greatest, with the greatest amount of people in the smallest amount of time.
So where did the idea behind all this come from?
I believe it came from Dr. McPhee, the university president, and you know, some legislators were getting together and thinking about, you know, they knew this was an issue and how they could solve this critical issue.
And now, one of the requirements, you need to be a Tennessee resident in order to get the full scholarship.
That's right. Yes.
Is that really the main requirement? I mean, other than, you know, you have to graduate high school, of
sure,
course, and
yeah,
meet those basic requirements. But is there anything else?
There are. Yeah. So students need, we're looking for, of course, our high achieving students. And so you have to have a high school GPA of a 3.5 or higher. You have to have a 28 composite ACT score or higher. There's a pretty rigorous admissions process. And, you know, again, the students are gaining admission, not just to MTSU, but also to Meharry Medical College. And typically that doesn't happen until a student's third or fourth year of college. And so this is, again, a unique opportunity for students coming directly out of high school to gain entry and get their acceptance to medical school right off the bat.
Now, what happens if that student doesn't end up graduating and, you know, in the forecasted schedule that, you know, they're hoped to graduate?
Sure. Yeah. So when that happens, we have an off-ramp for students. Our program is very closely mirrored to a biochemistry degree. And so students, we've had students in the past who have come out of the program, completed a Bachelor of Science in biochemistry, and then gone on and either worked in the field or tried again for medical school or another professional school.
So if they do that, will they still have to, you know, will it be charged to them? Will they have to pay for anything?
Their scholarship ends if they're no longer in the program. So yes, once they deviate from the route that they've chosen for the Meharry program, the medical school or the acceptance program, then they lose that scholarship, unfortunately.
And again, how many students do you have right now in this program?
We've got six students in our newest cohort that Nick is a part of. We have, I think, three students in the cohort above them, and then three students in the cohort above that cohort. And then we also have three groups at Meharry as well. And those, there's, I'm getting, trying to get this right, five, two, and six, I think, at Meharry right now, if I'm getting my numbers correct.
So is there a cutoff period? You know, you can only have X amount of students involved in this?
we are looking for 10. We are looking for cohorts of 10 to 15. And so, you know, that's why we're really hoping to drive up our applications and we're looking for the best quality students out there. And so if you're listening and interested in applying, remember December 1st is your deadline to get all of your materials in.
Now, what about students who do want to go into a more specialized field once they earn that degree? I mean, once they're a doctor, if they want to, you know, focus on, treating patients with cancer or something along those lines.
Sure. So there is an opportunity for students who are interested in that once they complete their program, once they have been released from their obligations from the program, they can go back and respecialize if they're interested in doing that.
And again, what kind of time period are we looking at? So after a student graduates high school, they're 18, and then they, you know, start at MTSU. How long of a track is this?
So students starting at 18, they have 3 years at MTSU, 4 years at Meharry in a traditional medical education, a three-year residency program after Meharry, and then a three-year working commitment to the state of Tennessee.
And during that residency, that is what Meharry, they will place that student at a hospital. And is that part, the residency part, is that also in a rural setting, or could that be in Nashville, for example?
Most likely wouldn't be in Nashville. Rural, yes, but also underserved. So if there are any communities deemed underserved, those might be more, they might not be the actual rural areas, but if they're considered underserved, they could be anywhere in the state.
So when you say underserved, I mean, it could be just, let's say, for example, if Murfreesboro didn't have enough medical doctors here in town, then that would be considered an underserved community.
That's right. Yes. I don't believe Murfreesboro is, but there are local communities outside of Murfreesboro that are considered underserved. So those might be part of that.
Okay. So that I mean, once you factor underserved in, That's a lot of areas, I bet.
It does widen widens the opportunities quite a bit, yes.
And does the student get to pick? I mean, have they got any choice in there as far as saying, this is where I would like to be?
I think for the residency, I believe they're going to be matched to a traditional match program. And then beyond that, we're not there yet, so I'm not 100% sure how that will work. I hope that the students will have some say in where they go and they're not just shipped off somewhere that maybe they don't want to be. But again, they do know that they're going into this with the idea that they will be working with rural and underserved areas.
So does that scholarship also pay for an apartment? If, you know, residency is 3 hours from here.
Right.
Does it pay for any living expense?
It does not pay for living expenses. It is restricted right now to tuition and fees. Students in the program do receive stipends in the summer as undergraduates, and that is to help with some living expenses. So the first summer, they're involved with a shadowing experience in a rural or underserved area. And then their second summer, they get to do a research project at Meharry. And so they receive stipends for that work.
But now, when doing residency, is that a paid position typically by the hospital?
It is.
Okay, so that should cover, I would guess, most expenses.
Yes, I don't believe it's the same as a traditional doctor would make, but it is not nothing.
And for anybody who may be interested in this program, let's say a parent listening and they know their child is wanting to go that medical route, what should they do?
They're free to reach out to me if they have any questions. We have a website that has a lot of our information, including the application. That website is mtsu.edu/medschool, M-E-D-S-C-H-O-L. OL, and that would be the best place to start.
And again, about how many students have already entered into this program?
Overall, we've had well over 20 that have gone through the entire program, and we're looking to, you know, expand our offerings.
Again, with us this morning, Eric Miller, Advising Manager of the Pre-Professional Health Science Advising Center in the MTSU College of Basic and Applied Sciences, and then also Nick Yellamelli, first-year MTSU student in the Medical School Early Acceptance Program at MTSU and Meharry. Thank you both for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Eric Miller, the Advising Manager of the Pre-Professional Health Science Advising Center on the MTSU campus, and first-year student Nikhil Yellamelli.
Hi, this is Dave Kivenemi at Music World and Drummer's Den, 2762 South Church Street in Murfreesboro. We're across from Indian Hills Golf Course. Come out and see us for all of your music needs. We've got guitars, pianos, amps, drums, PA equipment, rentals, lessons, most anything you can think of in the music genre. Come see us at Music World and Drummer's Den on South Church. We're across from Indian Hills Golf Course.
We chose Adams Place for the security.
We're talking with Peggy Cunningham. What do you enjoy most about Adams Place?
They lock the doors at 8 o'clock at night, and you have to have a code to get in, so I feel very safe when I go to sleep.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adams Place. Call me for more information about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111.
On Memorial.
Across from Walmart.
This is Peter Demas. Come eat with us at Demas's Restaurant. A lot of times when you get steamed vegetables such as broccoli or cauliflower, it's either soggy. One of the things that we wanted to do was make certain that it was still soft, but still had a little bit of a crunch to it. And so we worked on the procedure of how to cook that. And then all of our vegetables are seasoned with our seasoned salt. We keep that seasoned salt at home, and I can tell you almost all the vegetables I cook at home have the seasoned salt on it. Come eat with us at Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Dr. Murat Arik, Director of the MTSU Business and Economic Research Center in the MTSU Jones College of Business. How are you this morning?
I am doing great.
I know you've been on the air several times before, but tell us a little bit about what you do at MTSU.
I am the Director of Business and Economic Research Center, located in the Jones College of Business. I am also the shareholder for Chair of Excellence in Urban and Regional Planning at MTSU. Part of my job also, you know, is teaching strategic management and innovation courses at MTSU. That's also the academic side of me.
And there is so much growth in places like Rutherford County, so I'm sure there's lots of research to be done. How are you this morning?
I am doing great.
I know you've been on the air several times before, but tell us a little bit about what you do at MTSU.
So I am the Director of Business and Economic Research Center, located within the Jones College of Business. I am also the shareholder for Chair of Excellence in Urban and Regional Planning at MTSU. Part of my job also, you know, is teaching strategic management and innovation courses at MTSU. That's also the academic side of me.
And there is so much growth in places like Rutherford County, so I'm sure there's lots of research to be done.
You know, the growth is phenomenal. You know, I remember way back, you know, 2003. You know, that's the time I came here. 21 years ago. You know, when we arrived here, we were trying to find a Starbucks. You know, and it's just like, you know, coming from Hartford, Connecticut, Northeast. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, okay, it's just, we were like, you know, almost having second thought, you know. But then things start really blooming. It's incredible. And since then, you know, the growth is sixfold or tenfold, actually. It's just tremendous.
Does that make it a better, more interesting type place to be when it comes to doing research, when it comes to the business climate?
You know, always, you know, when you have growth, you have tremendous opportunities. You know, if you are trying to make your own, you know, it's a professional growth. Actually, that's the perfect time and perfect moment just to shine. But of course, growth also brings lots of challenges. You know, it's especially, you know, you have the infrastructure, the basic infrastructure. You have a limited resources and huge influx of people, lots of people coming to the region. And then, of course, you have a problem there. You know, you need to really take care of so many things in a short period of time and with limited resources. That's the challenge part. You know, it's just we see both of them at the same time when you have those growths.
One of your latest research projects actually took a look at alumni-owned businesses. And what did you find with that?
Let me give you a little bit about the study itself. You know, so every 4 or 5 years, we look at both the MTSU's impact and MTSU alumni's impact. And this time, we survey alumni, and we also gather secondary data. So we spend tremendous time to construct a reliable, you know, it's a rigorous assessment of how our alumni actually impact the region and the state. It's just giving you some key data points. You know, it's, we have over 115,000 alumni currently in Tennessee, and over 70% actually live within the Nashville MSA area, metropolitan area. This is a kind of tremendous, tremendous workforce, skilled workforce for the region, for the companies, for the businesses. We look at, you know, so we use a methodology, you know, so to identify several layers of impact. You know, so first one was wage difference between a high school graduate and college graduate, and then look at the core impact, you know, how MTSU, what kind of impact MTSU providing. And then second layer was the total spending of MTSU alumni in the region, their total contributions. And the third part actually include second part, their total spending, plus their entrepreneurial activities.
Dr. Arik is the director of the Business and Economic Research Center in the MTSU Jones College of Business.
The impact is tremendous when you include the entrepreneurial activities. It's just the growth is phenomenal. You know, our estimates put the impact around $15 billion across Tennessee. Now, when we survey our alumni, we had a battery of questions about the entrepreneurial activities. And based on those questions, we estimated that about 7%, that's a very conservative estimate. You know, so we were extremely taking the absolute minimum level. 7% of our alumni engage in business activities, their own businesses. Some of them, you know, it's just simply single person operation, but many of them, you know, simply, you know, it's out there setting up their own business, employing significant number of people, and, you know, it's helping region grow tremendously.
And I guess even for single person operation type businesses, they too had an impact, because I'm sure products they sold, companies they work with, I mean, whatever that picture may look like.
It's definitely, even if a single person, you know, so when you talk about entrepreneurial activities, you are talking about several things. I mean, of course, the talent is key, and then the leadership too. So that leadership part is tremendous. Having, even if you are a single person employee, you are a leader in your community and trying to change the dynamics and make a difference in the lives of the people that, you know, so you work and live together, you know, say in counties across Tennessee.
The types of businesses out there that you have MTSU alumni working at, was it a wide variety?
It is wide variety. You know, it's, the survey responses we received, this was the first survey we had, and the responses, not many. So it's hard to make, you know, it's a broad generalization, but based on the limited data we have, it's just across the field. It's not really, you know, it's concentrated in certain areas.
And then here in Rutherford County alone, the MTSU alumni residents, that number stands at around 32,500.
Yes. You know, it's, I remember Chamber President actually made that remark, you know, it's, in the press release, and he said, I cannot think of Murfreesboro without MTSU. That basically refers to that number. And you multiply that number when you are talking about the economic impact. That's what we call ripple impact. You know, simply each person earns, you know, income, and then that person goes out and spend that money and creating a ripple impact. Depending on which industry you are employed, that ripple impact could be, you know, say anywhere from 1 to 4. So if you are in manufacturing, your impact a lot more large. In construction, again, it's very large.
Sure. And then Davidson County, the number of MTSU alumni there looks to be about 19,300 or so. And if you look at all the other smaller counties like Williamson County, Wilson County, mm-hmm. Murray County, I mean, there's a lot. So 10,000 one location, 6,000 another, 4,400 then in Murray County. But that's a lot of students.
You know, sir, when you are speaking of those numbers in a relative term from a you know, sir, in terms of percentage-wise, you know, what you see, the counties around Rutherford County, including Rutherford County, of course, is the core. All the counties employing, having significant number of alumni, And when you compare those alumni with the non-farm employment, in all those counties, about more than 10% of their non-farm employment associated with Middle Tennessee State University's alumni. This is what I call, it's a ring of prosperity around, you know, it's a Rutherford County, it's tied to MTSU.
This is what's fascinating. Over 114,000, of course, MTSU alumni who live and work in this area. But then you look at other states, Florida, Texas, Alabama, Georgia. It gets fascinating when you start to think about how these folks who graduated here in Murfreesboro at MTSU are out in other states. And then what is the impact in those other states?
Unfortunately, we didn't really go into detail to calculate, you know, our goal was to focus on Tennessee, you know, but again, if you look at the map and the numbers, you could see significant concentration of MTSU alumni in the southeastern states, especially, you know, Georgia. It's a huge presence, you know, similarly, you know, Alabama and Florida. It shows that great regional force. But of course, you know, you have also Texas over there.
Yeah.
It's a significant number of, you know, people living there. You know, it's just contributing to economies of the states across the United States. Currently, the reports on our website, berc.mtsu.edu. It's a Business and Economic Research Center at Middle Tennessee State University. We have also other data products on our website, some dashboards, you know, tracking Tennessee's economy, you know, it's a housing dashboard, and also some of the recent studies. We put some of them on our website. Normally, we do consulting work. We deal with, you know, any type of business problems, and we engage our faculty, ourselves. We have more than 150 faculty members in Jones College of Business ready to engage and help solve the community's problems. Some of them strictly confidential, maybe consulting, but many of them publicly available on our website.
Sounds good. Well, again, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Murat Arik, the Director of the Business and Economic Research Center in the MTSU Jones College of Business.
We're excited to announce that Capstar Bank is now officially a division of Old National Bank. The friends you've made while banking right here over the years are still here, and so are those delicious, warm, homemade cookies. Everything you enjoyed about Capstar is still at Old National Bank.
In Murfreesboro at 2230 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Come on over and enjoy warm cookies with friends while doing your banking at Old National Bank.
Old National Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
This is Peter Demas. Come eat with us at Demas's Restaurant. A lot of times when you get steamed vegetables such as broccoli or cauliflower, it's either soggy. One of the things that we wanted to do was make certain that it was still soft, but still had a little bit of a crunch to it. And so we worked on the procedure of how to cook that. And then all of our vegetables are seasoned with our seasoned salt. We keep that seasoned salt at home, and I can tell you almost all the vegetables I cook at home have the seasoned salt on it. Come eat with us at Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Our guests now include Kia Downen, a student at MTSU, and she is a media management student and chapter president of the Gold Key International Honor Society. Also with us right now, Mira Rempis Locke, coordinator for student engagement at MTSU. Mira is also in programming under the MTSU Honors College. And now Kia Downen.
MTSU is really one of those student-driven universities. I'll say I think it really stands out in my experience because it empowers students to really take their own initiative, and faculty are encouraged to connect with students and bridge those passions into actualized events, basically making their visions reality.
And so what are some of those events that you've been a part of or helped with?
So last semester, I organized an event for stewards of children for their child abuse prevention training. And I invited members of the community and our campus to come take this free training course. I contacted the Child Advocacy Center. They sent an instructor completely free. And we even had some people from Motlow come. and it was about 20 turnout. And it's just part of every Tennessean civic duty to report any abuse that they see. As soon as you turn 18, you're legally required to do that. A lot of people don't realize that. So I just wanted to connect that with other people and kind of scaffold understanding of how we can best advocate for other people.
Student doing this project.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So what made you want to go this direction with the Child Advocacy Center?
So April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, and it was just timely and it was pertinent. And the Honors College really focuses on engaging students to take responsibility for your civic duties. And I thought that this was a good way to communicate something people didn't necessarily know much about.
And then how did you get involved and where did you fit in?
So I am the event coordinator, essentially, of the MTSU Honors College. And the way that I became involved in helping and assisting Kia with this is Kia is very ambitious. And luckily, we have a lot of students like Kia who are ambitious. And when Kia became a transfer fellow, we knew that she was going to be working on a lot of different programs. And essentially, in my role, I'm one of the people who helps coordinate the Buchanan Transfer Fellow application. And I had spoken to Kia before she actually became a transfer fellow. And we had just, honestly, we get along well and we got on well. So that was really how the two of us became involved. And then we are pretty close in age. I am an alumni of MTSU and I am actually currently enrolled in the teacher education program, in addition to being the full-time event coordinator of the Honors College. So having the opportunity to look at this from both an administrative side and as well as a student-oriented side, we just worked well together and we can see a lot of perspectives that help with content organizing.
So what are some of the most important things that you see key to not only educate students about, but also the community?
I think, it being an election year, that would be my gut response. I've worked heavily with MTSU's American Democracy Project. But I do think that overall, the things that we vote for in each election are important. And in terms of what we are here to discuss today about, there are a lot of things that we could lose when it comes to disability access. And so that's part of the reason that we are looking to advocate for disability access this month.
And so how are you going about getting that message out there as far as disability goes?
Absolutely. That one is actually all Kia. Pretty much everything that I have done has been exclusively to assist Kia, and Kia is really self-sufficient. So I've really just been here as a backbone for moral support. I have had my own experiences with disability. I am colorblind and I'm dyslexic, and that's actually something that Kia and I both had talked about at the very beginning, and that's kind of where our connection grew and continues now to grow.
So what does the general public think when they hear that word disability? Do they even understand the word disability, or is it better understood today when compared to, let's say, 20 years ago?
So I think right now there's a rise in interpreting mental health disorders as disabilities. However, that also perpetuates the misconception that disabilities are still rare. When in reality, if you live long enough, you will acquire a disability. You will acquire vision impairment, hearing impairment, or mobility impairment. No one's going to live to 120 and be running marathons.
Right.
Literally, almost everyone knows someone close to them who has a disability. I've spoken to my audiologist about the fact that as you have hearing loss, as it persists and worsens, if it's not supplemented with hearing aids, that is a factor that makes dementia progress faster because it pulls from your executive function.
Kia Downen is a student at MTSU. Also in studio, Mira Locke, coordinator for student engagement at MTSU.
The main change in understanding, I feel like, for disabilities has been that all people need and deserve accommodation. Disabilities aren't necessarily something that people don't experience because everybody needs some kind of level of accommodation, whether or not that is a learning disability, a cognitive disability, a physical disability. Everybody deserves to have access to accommodations, and that accommodations exist separate of disability as well. So I think the public move for us to embrace accommodations has been really helpful to the overall conversation around physical disabilities.
Is there a basic problem of just the average person out there understanding, believing even a person has a disability if they can or cannot see that disability?
Absolutely. So I would say if you looked at specifically my profile, you'd see a very active student. I work two jobs in healthcare. I am full-time at the university. I am president of two different honor societies. I'm a member of two others. I volunteer with Greater National Regional Council, et cetera. But also, I have a neurological disorder. I can usually only be awake about 4 to 6 hours a day. And when you add that dynamic to that external resume, it frames a completely different person. Mm-hmm. And so I think it tells a lot about an individual when you understand how you can best accommodate them and then what they can achieve when you do so.
Absolutely. And I think too, you know, I've always understood what it means to have a disability as somebody who has one, and my sister also does. She is 11. But understanding more about what accommodation looks like and what disability, like what the umbrella branch of disability really is, I learned so much more when I actually went into MTSU's teacher education program, because the focus really with the College of Education is that all students deserve accommodation, regardless of whether or not they are tier one, to tier two, tier three, and all students deserve accommodation. And that doesn't stop once you leave public education. Even at the college level, people deserve accommodation. And we have a really wonderful disability services program on our campus that has been helpful, at least to me, as somebody with dyslexia. I've gone for testing help before. So it looks different for everybody. And I think the general consensus and rhetoric over time has changed to be more disability positive. People understand that disability is not just physical disability.
Is there a better understanding of disabilities on a college campus versus off a college campus?
In my experience, I would say yes, because we are, as educators and as a future educator, we are aware of what it actually takes to get a child or a student from point A to point B. And we have a goal of what we want a student to be able to learn. And it is our job to assist them in any way that we can. And so I think that, you know, if you are going into the field of education, you have a love not only for the subject that you're teaching, but for the students that you are impacting. And you can't support a student without also accommodating them.
And we're running out of time, but as we close this morning, what are some of the things that, I don't know, points that you would like to make sure the public understands or better knows about?
So the National Disability Employment Awareness Month conference that I'm hosting, it's going to be featured on mtsu.edu/live, and it'll be in person at our MT Center in our Ingram building. And this event will feature five speakers and a guest MC, which will be Megan Thomas. And they all are successful individuals with different disabilities, and they're going to share their perspectives and their interpretations of success and leadership and showcase basically how they have been able to accomplish so much in their lives. And I think that it's important to hear those different perspectives so we can better understand that.
So these guest speakers, do they also have a background with disabilities?
Some of them do directly, some of them don't, but they all have disabilities.
Thank you both for joining us this morning. And again, if anybody would like to learn more about any of this, what is the website?
Well, MTSU News should be releasing a press release soon. I think we'll just have to wait on that.
And I'm sure you can Google, you know, MTSU disabilities, and what would be the best thing to search for?
It would be the NDEAM 2024 in MTSU. And our Honors College will be posting about it soon.
Sounds good. Again, with us this morning, we have Kia Dowen and then Mira Rempis-Locke. Thank you both for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Hey, hi, and hello there.
Rutherford Issues with Brian Barrett.
Fun lovers and truth seekers.
Weekday mornings at 10 on WGNS AM FM online. Hey, neighbor, when you talk, others listen. If it's on Good Neighbor Talk, keep it here. WGNS, AM, FM, online.